Welcome to the Dan Decker Books Podcast. I'm your host, Dan Decker. This podcast is dedicated to providing my books in full, unabridged audio format. Look for new episodes every Tuesday. Now, on with the show. Black Brick by Dan Decker. Hello, and welcome back to the podcast. We are continuing to read the novel Black Brick. Last week we read, "That man that killed your father," Chris said. "Stanley Redder, the one you left alive? You ever wonder who he was working with?" I paused. The change in direction took me off guard, but it was not particularly startling. She had been talking about my parents that night at the club. I wondered about where she was getting her information. Not many people knew that I'd killed one of my parents' murderers. "No," I said. "He's rotting in jail. I read the police report, but it did not have anything useful." I remembered very clearly the man talking on his cell phone while looking over the body of my dead mother after he'd secured me to a chair with duct tape. "What if I told you I had evidence of who was really behind the death of your parents?" I bit my lip. The other day, she had said my mother was still alive. Had she got the facts wrong, or was she hiding something? "You don't," I said. "You sure about that?" she asked. "Yeah." "Are you sure the right man is sitting in jail? You ever been back?" "Course not," I said, standing. She was going too far. "Make the trip," Chris said. "I promise you will be interested in what you find." Shaking my head, I left without another word. The pictures and her claims were disturbing, but I was far more bothered by her attempts to leverage the deaths of my parents for her own purposes. I did not know where she was going with all this, or how she had found out about my actions on the day my parents died, but one thing was for certain. I wasn't going to become her pawn. She could play her games with somebody else. And now? 24. I looked up from my tablet and noted that I still had 10 minutes before I needed to get off the train. I had too many questions, and what Chris had said to me about my parents' killer was eating away at me. Beltran had insisted everybody take the day off, and I had been only too happy to take a break. I'd looked for pictures of Stanley Redder online, but the only one I had found had been of him being led from the courthouse. His face had been covered. I should have been able to find his mugshots, and it bothered me that I had not. Had my parents been killed so Beltran and Peck could recruit me? I did not know of a single agent who did not come from a background like mine. Redder had called somebody else the day he and his partner had murdered my parents. Who? Peck? Beltran? If I'd learned anything during the last couple of weeks, coincidences should not be ignored. When Chris had turned up wanting to talk while I was alone in the library, I should have seen through that right away. Something in the back of my mind told me that this led to paranoia, but I refused to pay it heed. Paranoia was a useful asset in this business. After the incident with my parents, I'd never been interviewed by the police about what had happened. As an adult, I had just chalked it up to shoddy police work, but I could not deny that it was yet another coincidence tied to that day. I shook my head. This was taking me nowhere. And to what end would that serve? It was unthinkable that Peck and Beltran had been involved in the murder of my parents, but the coincidence nagged at me like a hanging nail. There was somebody reading the paper on the other side of the train car. A picture of the train bombing was on the cover. The headline read, "Government Conspiracy." I wondered if maybe somebody had finally been tipped to our involvement. But then I noticed that I was looking at the front page of a gossip rag. "Terrible shame," said a woman who sat beside me. She'd noticed me staring at the paper. "I have a friend whose son died in that explosion." "Sorry to hear that," I said, trying to avoid eye contact and hoping that she would not feel inclined to further engage in conversation. 10 years old. I have a good mind to march down to the Philly Tattletale and give them a piece of my mind. Trying to exploit a terrible tragedy like this? Have they no respect for the dead?" She sputtered and paused. "Sure, I suppose it's possible a rogue government agency could have had something to do with it. Sometimes fingers on the same hand have no idea what the others are up to." "You're one of those," I said, "buying into the idea that the government somehow benefits from bringing tragedy to its citizens?" "Not the government in general," she said. "Corrupt individuals, maybe. But I wouldn't believe it unless I saw ironclad evidence of guilt." "Lady, you have no idea," I thought. I wondered what she would do if I confessed to my involvement. She handed me a flyer. It was titled, In Memory of Jerry Kalla. I stared at the large picture of the young boy and struggled to keep my face straight. Below were other smaller pictures depicting the boy with a soccer ball, at the beach, and at a birthday party with friends. That is a terrible shame, I said. Mind if I keep this? Go ahead. I thanked her, folded it up, and put it away. I was not sure what had made me ask for it, but I figured remembering him was the least I could do for a life that had ended because of a decision I had made. When it came time for my stop, I almost did not get off. But I had come this far, and I wanted to know if there was something to Chris's implication that Redder was somehow innocent. I got off the train at the last possible second. An hour later, when I looked up as Redder walked into the room and sat down in front of me, I knew that Chris had been right. This was not the man who had killed my parents. If she was right about this, what should I think of her assertions that I didn't work for the government? What do you want? The man asked from the other side of the glass. I looked into the face of the wrongfully imprisoned man and could not find the right words to say. Sorry, it sucks to be you, did not seem adequate, and I did not want to give the man hope that I could somehow free him. Jake Ramsey was officially dead, and would be able to do nothing for this man. That had been part of the deal when Beltran had recruited me. Made a mistake, I said. Thought you were somebody else. I stood and tried to avoid looking back into the man's eyes. I felt bad for this innocent man serving a life sentence with no hope of exoneration. I wished I could do something for him, but at the moment I had too many other problems to deal with. An hour later, I was on the train and almost to my stop when Beltran called. When I answered, I had a hard time paying attention as he told me that Martinez had been spotted by the surveillance team we kept on Vargo. He ordered me back to Blackbrick so we could prepare to capture Martinez when he came out of the new Diagon headquarters. I found myself telling him I was 10 minutes away before hanging up. That's it for this week. I hope you have enjoyed the show. Tune in next week for another installment of the Dan Decker Books Podcast. One last thing before you go. Sign up for my newsletter at dandeckerbooks.com and you will receive a free ebook. The text, audio, and music for this show are all copyrighted by Dan Decker. All rights reserved. This podcast is published by Xander Revolutions LC.